Hey, iTalk movie fans. Today I am in studio with multi-award-winning documentarian Mick McIntyre. He'll be talking about his latest Kangaroo, a love-hate story. Don't go away.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's iTalk Movie.
I love that clapping. It makes me feel good coming in every single time. How are you, Mick?
It's great to be here.
It is wonderful to have you here. Now, before we get started, where can everyone find you on social media?
Yeah, kangaroothemovie.com and hashtag kangaroothemovie and hashtag I care about kangaroos.
And we all care about kangaroos. Let's find out more about why. I'm your host, Zoe Hewitt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RealZoeHewitt. Now, talking about Kangaroo, a love-hate story, this documentary was about 4 years in the making. Is that right? Where did it come from?
Yeah, look, we knew that the kangaroo was an international icon. I mean, everyone knows about the kangaroo. In fact, we did some early research and it showed that the kangaroo was the third most recognisable icon in the world behind the Statue of Liberty and the Eiffel Tower. So we knew that there was appeal there. And as documentarians, we know we have to make subjects that have appeal because we have to compete against, you know, blockbusters and stuff. So we thought, okay, yeah, let's talk about the kangaroo. But also growing up in Australia, we also knew that there was another side to the kangaroo, and that is that they have been perceived as pests in our farmland. So we also knew that there was some conflict there. So yeah, we thought that this was an interesting story to tell.
And for me, I was telling you before we started, I was shocked. I had no idea. I just think of kangaroos just hopping around everywhere, and that's that. So knowing that there were sort of these underlying issues, what is the first step when you start making a documentary like this?
Yeah, well, you thank goodness for Google. and you start talking to people. Often what we'll do is we'll find experts in the field and we'll set out to interview them, because there's nothing like getting to know someone by asking them on camera something about the subject. In fact, very early on in production, we secured an interview with a government person from National Parks. Mm-hmm. And we sat down with the interviewer and we talked about kangaroos and we talked about, you know, the management of kangaroos. And he casually dropped in the interview that this was the largest wildlife slaughter on the planet. And we kept going with the interview and, you know, we took it back that night to the edit suite and we were playing back the footage and we went, right, this is probably a bigger subject than we realize. Uh-huh. And the way he so casually put it was shocking. And so of course what we unpacked was just that there's this, there's a huge commercial exploitation of the kangaroo that we had no idea about.
Right. And so you interview so many people in the documentary. How do you decide when you're working on it who you're going to pick and how to stay balanced, since you have to come across as very impartial, right?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We felt like we wanted to immerse people in the subject. Mm-hmm. And to immerse someone in the subject, you need to hear from both sides. And as an Australian, I was really keen to talk to as many people as we could, because I realised it's a cultural issue just as much as anything else. So we really wanted to ask as many questions to as many people as we could. And I think we succeeded. We talked to, you know, many stakeholders, whether it be the Australian government, whether it be farmers or people who are involved in the commercial killing of kangaroos. We spoke to activists, environmentalists. And yeah, I mean, it's hard because you spend a lot of time trying to find the right person, and you also do a lot of interviews that end up on the cutting room floor.
Right. And so I feel like we've jumped ahead. I feel like there should be a kangaroo pun in there somewhere, but we haven't quite described exactly what is in this documentary and what is so controversial. So will you explain for people who haven't seen it yet, who are looking forward to seeing it perhaps, then what it is that they're in for?
Yeah, so here we have this recognizable international icon that everyone knows about. an animal that is widely loved, an animal that is widely used as corporate logos. It's on the tail of our national airline, Qantas. It's, you know, it's used by sporting teams. It's just a, it's used by our tourism, you know, office that attracts people to come to Australia, mm-hmm. and yet it's subject to a commercial kill that has now put a price on the kangaroo as a commercial entity. And so there's this sort of dichotomy going on between this loved icon and this animal that's being sold for profit. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the film explores.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk being sold for profit, we're talking being sold as animal meat. We're talking being sold for human meat and leather. So three things that surprised me tremendously. And so what surprises most people when they see the film?
Yeah, look, I think that, I mean, we've released here in America to a very positive response from audiences across America. We're really pleased with people, and the most common response we're getting from audiences here in America is just that, mm-hmm. shock, and I had no idea, right. that this was going on. No idea that they were being killed in such numbers for profit, and no idea that the products that were being made were ending up in supermarkets in America, ending up in shoes in America. So yes, the most common response has been, wow, we had no idea.
And I think too, part of it, aside from the killing, for maybe people who aren't quite as animal rights activist-y watching, that it's also that it's done so inhumanely, that meat that's used for food typically is treated far better both in the slaughter and then the processing than the kangaroos are, from what I gather.
Yeah, I mean, there is the commercial that I need to also state that the kangaroo is also killed for farmers being able to control what they call pests mitigation. So the farmers can also kill them as pests. There's also they're also killed for sport, which is somehow part of our culture. Mm-hmm. The commercial industry that is making profit out of the kangaroos is regulated by government. It does have a code of practice about how these animals need to be killed. But what we learned in making the film is that this is done in the middle of the bush, in the middle of the night. So basically no one's out there watching. And we found people that were willing to come forward with evidence that it's not done humanely. And that was really shocking. So we have a situation where we have an animal that's not farmed. Mm-hmm. So the products are not coming from a farmed kangaroo. They're coming from an animal that's killed in the wild. And, yeah, we found that they are killed often in very inhumane ways. And that that's results in suffering by the kangaroo. Mm. And also the baby joeys that, that are a... you know, are left in the dying mother's pouch that also have to be disposed with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, there is a serious animal welfare issue with, mm-hmm. with this killing of kangaroos.
And so was it hard to get people to go on the record with you on the, you know, on the side of the killing?
I think we were pretty clear from the outset that we wanted to tell all sides of the story. We knew that it hadn't been told before, and we were clear with people that we wanted to tell that story. We wanted to tell the complete picture. We wanted to tell people that, yes, here's this magnificent icon. We wanted to show them bounding across the Australian landscape, but we also wanted to tell that they've been killed and sold for profit. So we were clear with people, and people were, you know, were willing to tell their side of the story.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, recently, Variety compared you guys to The Cove and Blackfish, which is an apt comparison. And so would you say this is a growing piece of recognition that people are realizing we need to pay more attention to how the animals are treated?
Yeah, look, we didn't set out to make a film that would be compared to The Cove. Of course, it's high praise to be compared to an Oscar-winning documentary, but it's certainly not something we set out to make. It is the story that we ended up telling, because as storytellers, that was the most compelling story. And yes, since then we've learned that there is a growing interest in those types of stories, and I guess that's why we've got such a positive response here in America, because yeah, there is this growing interest in how we're treating our wildlife. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And certainly it's a big issue here. And here in California, we're particularly liberal in those ways that we want to take extra good care of our animals, because we're actually one of the early states that stopped importing kangaroo meat along with Russia and the UK.
Yeah, so California, we have learned in making this film, has a proud record of wildlife protection, which is something obviously to be proud of. And we learned in making this film that California has banned the import of kangaroo products into your state. Something that goes against the Australian government's wishes. We learnt making the film that the Australian government is lobbying hard for California to overturn that ban, to allow kangaroo products to be sold in California. So, yeah, and also, as you mentioned, Russia has banned the import of kangaroo products due to another factor, and that is the hygiene factor. So there's clearly concern from legislators about this industry.
And the hygiene factor, that was their high levels of E. coli and salmonella, is that right, in the kangaroo meat?
Yeah, so basically what happens with the wildlife, the wild kangaroo killing, is that they are killed in the wild and they are butchered in the wild, which basically means that they can't guarantee the hygiene of the meat when it's killed. And so what happened with independent testing was that independent testing came up with high levels of E. coli and salmonella, which of course made big news in Australia, and it also made big news in Russia, causing the Russian government to conduct their own tests on random samples of kangaroo meat, and as a result they banned the import of kangaroo products.
Which is fascinating, because Russia wouldn't be a country that you'd think of as being very high on the, you know, let's take care of the meat issue.
It was a surprise to us, but it's something that still stands today.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that was since 2009, right, when Russia stopped the import. Yeah, so a long time ago, and that this has been going on as well.
Yeah, well, basically what we've learned is that the killing practice, the butchering practices of the kangaroo industry, they can't guarantee that it's that the meat is hygienic.
Mm-hmm. And so when you're making a documentary like this, and you know you're committing up front to most likely 3 to 4 years of your life, which is a good chunk of time, maybe not in terms of documentary land, but in terms of real life, are there points where you feel like, oh, I just need to stop? Like, you know, a year in, oh, maybe this was a mistake. Is there ever that point?
Of course. I'd be lying. And I got to point out that my partner in all of this, Kate, who couldn't be here today. You know, we're a husband-wife team, and which has its own challenges, but its own rewards as well. Look, there have been many times that this has seemed too hard, and you just have to, you know, we take a deep breath and trust in our craft and trust in the story, and. This is the wonderful time when we get vindicated by the audiences, because you get to sit with the audiences and realize, oh, our faith has been vindicated. But yeah, look, it's tough. And I won't lie to you, this has been a tough film to make as an Australian. Mm-hmm. It's been difficult to be in my own land and amongst my own people and talk about this subject, which is polarizing a lot of people, including my own circle of friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's a cultural thing. It goes back a long way, this sort of exploitation of our national icon. Mm-hmm. So, but look, we trusted in the material we got. We trusted in the edit process. And, yeah, we're very proud of what we've made.
So when did that transition take place? That the national icon certainly has been for a long time, but when did it sort of, the kangaroo stop becoming national icon and more meal?
Well, that's the fascinating part about the story, and I'm still asking the question, because when what we researched was that it goes back, Australia's only been settled by white people for 250 years, and we literally had to go back that far. Mm-hmm. To understand why there's this cultural perception that they are a problem. Mm-hmm. And it does go back to when white settlers landed in Australia, and they immediately, the records show, that they immediately saw the native animals as a competition to the agriculture. Uh-huh. That's what is very strong today still, that somehow our endemic native wildlife is a problem, yet they have been there and adapted to the environment way better than white farming practices have. So it's still there today, and that's the issue that we hear most about, that they are a threat to agriculture, where what we've learned in the film is that they're clearly not. There is this opportunity to coexist with kangaroos that just hasn't been talked about.
And do you think that some of that comes from, I guess, Australia becoming more and more developed?
Yeah, of course. I mean, food security is a worldwide issue, and of course there's an issue about how are we going to grow enough food to feed Australians. And look, I know as Australian, I totally understand that. We have an issue where our droughts are longer and more frequent. So as a country, we have issues with our climate. We have issues with having enough, you know, topsoil to grow agriculture. So I understand that the agricultural industry and farmers are under increasing pressure. But what we found was to the proportion of blame on the kangaroo was completely out of whack. It just seemed incongruous to us that you would blame a native species for the farmers' problems.
And do you think at all that that's similar to the issues that like we have in the US with people talking about hunting, or should we hunt, especially like wolves? That's a big one here. Is this a similar concept?
I think so. I think agriculture in this country has the same issues. What we've learned is that there hasn't been the level of exploitation, commercial exploitation of these animals. And that's what shocked us the most. That's why I think the film ended up being the way it is. The level of commercial exploitation of the kangaroo is staggering. And we researched other wildlife, and once you put a high price on wildlife, the wildlife lose.
Right, and we see this with elephants. Right? I mean, like, there are lots of animals talking about this that I can think of as, oh, this is maybe not exactly the same because it's not the same mass slaughter, but, oh, here's a similar comp of...
Oh, yeah, no, it's really similar. Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting because people, it's such a... This film is such new material for most people that they will laugh when we would compare a kangaroo to an elephant.
Or they really?
Well, because they just don't see it as that sort of issue, but... We researched and found out that we think it is. We think that there is that much pressure on the species, much like kangaroo, much like an elephant or whales even, that we've seen in history that, that commercial exploitation of those species has driven them close to extinction. You know, I've got to say, the other not-so-proud part of my country's past is that we have the highest mammal extinction rate of any continent in the world. Something that is not often talked about, something that I'm not very proud of. And that's often because we're very hesitant or late in declaring that there's a problem. And what I think Kate and I found in making this film is we do not want to be sitting back in 10 years' time and going, you know what, we did know something was going on and we didn't do anything. We didn't change our behaviour, and you know, with our track record of such high rates of extinction, it doesn't look good for the kangaroo at this rate.
Right. And I didn't know that about Australia, which is interesting because the stereotype, at least, is it's this great, you know, wild land, the new frontier, right?
and I wish it, I wish that was true. And don't get me wrong, I love Australia. I'm Australian, and I love the bush, and I love being out there, and I love, you know, our beautiful beaches and our beautiful national parks. And there's a, you know, that's still there. But there is this dark secret that we've got that no one is talking about.
Well, I think it's no different than, you know, everyone presumably loves their home country, but you can also recognize, like with your own family, right? But you can recognize that maybe it's not quite perfect and we could all do a little better somewhere, right?
And look, the least that Kate and I want to happen with this film is discussion, is a conversation about our magnificent icon in a civil way. And we mean a conversation, not a shouting match, you know, because if we look at social media at the moment, that's what's happening about it, this issue. We're just getting shouted at. And nothing's going to happen if people shout at each other. And we really are keen to have a civil conversation about this magnificent animal, this extraordinary species that we're so proud to call our own. Mm-hmm. And you know, we so hope that that will happen as a result of this film.
And so is there a lot that didn't make it into the final cut?
Yeah, there's so much that ends up on the cutting room floor. It's, I mean, I think there's segments that didn't make the film. I mean, we shot, what, over 150 hours of footage, and, you know, we only end up in 90 minutes. And, mm-hmm. and yeah, it's a challenge. It's hard. So, yes, there's lots of stuff. I think we're going to have to release some of it as iTunes extras.
I was going to ask, is there like a DVD extra?
Well, it used to be DVD extras. It's not anymore. It's iTunes extras now. But, yeah, there's some great sequences that we uh-huh. weren't able to include in the film, yeah.
And so when you're working on it, especially as the cinematographer, you're really close into this. What was the hardest part to say goodbye to?
Yeah, I mean, it's the hardest part. Yeah, I mean, it was a challenge technically. I've never used so many cameras on a film as mm-hmm. I did on this one. I think we ended up using 5 different formats because wow. it's quite a unique animal to try and film because mm-hmm. we wanted to capture it in full flight, which meant mm-hmm. slow motion tracking. Yeah. We wanted to show it from the air, which meant drone footage. We wanted to show it in it without being disturbed, so that meant long lens, broadcast uh-huh. lens. So there was a lot of experimenting, and in often very hot and windy conditions. But of course that meant that we got to spend time with these mm-hmm. wonderful animals. I'll miss being with the animals for sure. In fact, the family, Kate and I have been talking about, we're going to have to go back to our new favourite spot just to hang out with them without having to film them because the filming is hard work. So, yeah, I look forward to going back to this one national park where the big reds are still there. Mm. And I mean big, these big 7-foot wow. males mm. that just tower over you. And, yeah, that's one of the highlights of making this film for sure.
And are kangaroos gentle? Okay, do you have to be worried about your own safety when you're shooting
Well,
them?
They're herbivores. They're not predators, but they will protect. Mm-hmm. And the males are protective of their territory. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the males will do what they need to protect their territory. Mm-hmm. But, no, they're herbivores. They live in tight-knit family mobs, mm-hmm. as we call them mobs of kangaroos. And it was a pleasure to watch. It was a pleasure to watch the mothers and baby joeys, as we call them. You know, it was a pleasure to sit and watch them and nurture their young like mm-hmm. they do. And we had some great experiences of watching the older joeys wanting to clamber back because they have this wonderful pouch. Uh-huh. And some of the older joeys were far too big to get in the pouch, but determined to try. And mum having to go, no, you're too old, you know. But basically just a caring animal that lives in tight-knit family mobs, yeah.
And so you've worked on a lot of documentaries in addition to this one, right? You guys in 1997 started a production company focused specifically on social issues, but this is your first, am I correct, about animals specifically?
We made a film in 2002 called What to Do About Whales. We made one about a similar conversation, if you like, about what we're doing with whales around the world, which was just as interesting because again we wanted to immerse ourselves in the subject. So we mm-hmm. filmed in 2 countries that were whaling, Iceland mm-hmm. and Japan, and 2 countries that were wanting to whale watch, and that being New Zealand and the US. So yeah, that also brought up a very interesting discussion. But yeah, so we. Kate and I like to make films that have a new side to the story, but also that, yeah, look at social issues, yeah.
And so when you're doing something like that, do you feel like you need to present something in a very impartial way because you're documenting, or do you feel like there is also room within a documentary to have an opinion?
Yeah, look, I think it's an interesting space, isn't it? Because I think the documentaries do take on the flavour of the filmmaker. Mm. So I think what Kate and I discovered in making Kangaroo did shock us. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where the shock value comes in Kangaroo because, yeah, when you go home at night and you wade through the footage and you're shocked, mm-hmm. then it's hard not to put that on the screen. I think that automatically happens, yeah.
Absolutely. And you guys, so you're releasing, which you mentioned briefly, you're releasing here in the US and then you'll be coming out in Australia in March. And so you're doing a lot of special screenings around the US right now, is that correct?
Yeah, so we're on a fabulous screening tour. We are doing one night city events across the country, mm-hmm. and they've been so well received, and we're getting great people turning out. I mean, the power of social media is that, you know, people find out about these screenings. Mm-hmm. In the past that wouldn't have been possible. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, we've got a number of cities still to go, and we're excited about the people we're about going to meet, and you know, and engaging with people on this issue, because it is an international issue, and it does relate to Americans, because what we learned in making the film was that America is the second largest consumer of kangaroo products.
Wow, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have even begun to guess that.
So it's very relevant to mm-hmm. American audiences. And again, we talk about that when we have our Q&As, that mm-hmm. that Americans are using kangaroo products, and Americans generally want to know where the kangaroo products are turning up, and, mm-hmm. and you know, and... Yeah, that's been a revelation to most of the audiences here.
Yeah, is it disclosed when kangaroo products are used, or is it like a general meat or general leather?
It's a combination of things in America. Pet food is very prevalent in pet food here. It's used for human consumption in restaurants, and it's also used in shoes and fashion mm-hmm. items. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, I was so surprised by the fact that, you know, certainly that it's imported here, but that it's even a food or used in these ways. I'm curious, out of the cities that you visited, I guess the people probably who are coming to see it aren't saying, oh, yes, like, let me raise my hand, I eat kangaroo all the time. But do people seem to know that it's a thing?
No. Again, everything about this subject has been a revelation to mm-hmm. us as filmmakers. Yeah. But also to the people watching the film. So, no, American audiences have been really shocked that that America is using so much kangaroo products. Let's not forget, California does not.
We don't have it yet. right. But, I mean, even in traveling, I feel like I've never seen on a menu kangaroo, even as some sort of exotic dish that you could even order.
Yeah, I can't comment on that. I just know that it's here, and it's here in large quantities. And if the Australian government had their way, it would be here in California.
Right. It would be here everywhere. Yeah. Now, is China a big importer of kangaroo meat?
China, again, the Australian government sends delegations to China to try and convince the Chinese government mm-hmm. to accept kangaroo imports. Up until now, China hasn't accepted the imports. Mm-hmm. But it's something that we know the Australian government is committed to succeed in doing. And I think everyone watching will know that would be a huge problem. This is a wild animal that doesn't reproduce quickly, and so demand from China I think everyone knows what would happen.
But presumably, China is not importing because of the animal rights issues. It's because they don't want to import. Is that one of the issue?
Look, I think, again, we don't know this as fact because we didn't research it that much, although I did travel to China for the film, and I did film in China. So my understanding is that they're very concerned about the food safety. They're very concerned about the hygiene. Yeah. And again, because the industry can't guarantee mm-hmm. hygiene, I think China doesn't accept mm-hmm. you know, the meat because of hygiene reasons.
Wow, I'm kind of shocked that would be such a big issue. So you shot in China. How hard was it then to get permits to be able to go and shoot? They're so careful about things.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are careful. Look, it was fine. I mean, we were there with a delegation of other people. We were there with a political and a delegation, and yeah, we were just there accompanying them, and it, you know, it was fine. Mm-hmm. It was a great experience.
And where's the most interesting place you've traveled as we wrap things up, other than California? The most interesting place you've traveled on your press tour or while you were shooting, either one?
Oh, look, I mean, I love Australia, and we've made an Australian story, and I'm very proud of that. I think it's, you know, we do have a great country, a great culture, and I feel like I've really got to know my own country really in a much better way. Even though I'm sad and a bit ashamed about what we're doing, I still feel that, again, I feel now as an Australian, I want to have this conversation, and I think that this film will generate that conversation.
Absolutely. And people can find go to your website, and they can find where else you'll be for the press tour and the special screenings. Is that right?
Yeah. So on kangaroothemovie.com, if you go to the cinema listings, you'll see where we're coming, and hopefully we'll see you in your town. Can I mention also that we're really keen for people to host their own screenings?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's also on the website, kangaroothemovie.com. And all you've got to do is fill out a form. It's there on the website, and we'll do the rest. Uh-huh. And that can be two or three people in your living room, or it can be 50 people in your local hall. It's a really powerful way to show a documentary like this, and as you can probably tell, it's a great conversation starter.
Absolutely. Well, Mick, thank you so much for being here with me today. This has been absolutely fascinating. Everyone can catch Kangaroo, a love-hate story. They can go to the website. I am Zoe Hewitt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Real Zoe Hewitt. Until next time, bye-bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.